Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Laman Vav of Man Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is quoting from the Braita that we brought before, which is Hamima Enet Ein Laknas Velo Pitui. A girl who annuls her marriage is not entitled to Knas and Pitui. Ha Kitana Ba'alma Itlo. What you would suggest from this is that the problem here is that she was married. Since she was married, she's no longer a bitula, and that's why she doesn't have knas, that's why she doesn't have pitui. On the other hand, if she had not been married, had she simply been a ktana, because only a ktana is able to perform miyun, is able to annul her marriage, the implications are that a regular ktana would be entitled to knas. Mani, who would be the author of this braita? Rabbonon hi. It would have to be the Rabbonon, the Amrei ktana yesh la knas. Because there's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether a ktana is entitled to knas. Everybody agrees that a ne'ara is entitled to knas. A bogeret does not get knas. The only question is with regards to a ktana. Is a ktana entitled to the knas or not? The Chachamim say yes. Rabbi Meir says no. So based on that, the Chachamim must be the authors of this braita. Ema seifa. What about the latter half of the braita where it says, Ailonit? Ein la lo knas velo pitui, that an ilonit does not have knas or pitui. From an ilonit is a woman who never reaches puberty. She basically goes from being a ktana right over to being a bogeret. She skips over that period called ne'ara. So over here, if ilonit does not get a knas, does not get pitui, out to the Rabbi Meir. That goes according to Rabbi Meir, damar ktana ein la knas, who says a ktana does not get a knas. And then that's why this Ailonit never gets a knas, because Hamikat Nuta Yatzta the Bager. She went straight from being a ktana to being a bogeret. At the age of 20, she crosses over from being a ktana to bogeret when she reaches an age where she should have seen Simanei Narut, and she doesn't have them, then she moves from being a ktana to a bogeret. Because the Gemara Nivamot says that at a certain age, if we get certain Simanim, that she is an Ailonit, then we assume that she will never reach the point of Nyaru. We have the same thing by boy. Boy, we assume that he is a katan. And then when he hits his age of puberty, if he doesn't see the simanim that he should see at that point in time, then we wait. After he crosses over a certain threshold, we assume he's a saris and no longer able or will not have that ability to hit puberty. It's also biologically that way, which is, I think, if you see the simanim after that age, it won't make a difference because it's too late in the development of the body for that to make a difference. And the Gemara says, okay, well now we have a problem because Reisha Rabbonon, Beseifa Rabbi Meir. The Reisha is now authored by the Rabbonon who say that Tanai is entitled to Knas. That's the diuk we make out of the Mema Enet. The Seifa is like Rabbi Meir who we see says that a Tanai is not entitled to Knas. That's why an Ailunit is not entitled to Knas. Echeitema Kula Rabbi Meir he. If you think the entire Braita is really authored by Rabbi Meir, Ubima Enet Savarlaki Rabbi Yehuda, and by Miun, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, whose opinion we've seen before, but we'll see in a second, which is Umi Savarla. Does he really hold like Rabbi Yehuda? Vatanya, Admataya Bat Mima Enet. Until what age is a girl allowed to annul her marriage? Where she enters into a marriage midrabanan? Then, up to what age does he have that right just to refuse and say, I no longer want this marriage? Rabbi Meir's shita is very clear. It's when she becomes of age. As soon as she reaches the age of puberty, that's it. It's over. She's no longer a ktana. She can no longer perform miyun. Until the dark is greater than the light. Obviously, this is a point past the age of puberty. Rashi over here quotes from the Gemara Nida, which talks about the technicalities of it. It's Shtei Sarot Shochvot, B'nireh Kamosh Yirbeh HaShachor. Tosfot over here discusses why Ala Lavan, it's not really true. The basic concept is that Rabbi Yehuda believes that a girl can perform Miyun past the point of puberty, past the point of coming of age. Basically, through the age of Narut, she probably still can perform Miyun. That is because a Ne'ara is really only a 6-month window. And it's a transition stage. It sits between the stage of Ktana to the stage of Bogeret. Now, in their day, that was probably the prime time to get married during that period of Narut in that transition. But that transition period, is she still allowed to perform Miyun? According to Rabbi Meir, no. Once she's of age, it's over. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's until she reaches the point where your Be'er Shachor Alavan, which most likely is towards the end of that period of the Narut, she has an additional amount of time in which she could perform Miyun. Now, if Rabbi Meir subscribed to Rabbi Yehuda's position, then you can have a case where Miyun is done while the girl is in Na'ara. And what you would be Medayek out of the Breita is, Miyun, no Knas, because she was married already, we assume she's not a Betulah. But had she been a plain woman who was not married yet, at that same age, she would be entitled to Knas. What would that age be? Not a Ketana, but a Na'ara. Because Rabbi Yehuda thinks that you can have Miyun all the way up to the point when she is a Na'ara. Problem is that Rabbi Meir explicitly disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. So he can't subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda's position when he explicitly argues on him. Ela Rabbi Yehuda hi. Maybe the authorship of this bright is Rabbi Yehuda. Ubi ketana savar laki Rabbi Meir. But he subscribes to Rabbi Meir's position with regards to a ketana. So it's Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Braita. So Rabbi Yehuda says Miyun can go all the way until the age of Narut. And he holds like Rabbi Meir that Tana is not entitled to Knas. So since the Tana is not entitled to Knas, with regards to Miyun, the diok will be Miyun yes by Na'ara. If she was just a regular Na'ara, she would be entitled to Knas. That'll be the diok. And with regards to Ilonit, the reason there's no Knas is because she skips over Narut completely. She goes from Tana straight to Bogeret, and that's why there is no Knas. That's like Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara again says, Misavala, can Rabbi Yehuda really hold like Rabbi Meir? Or does he really hold like that? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir. That this position, that a Ketana is not entitled to Knas, is the position of Rabbi Meir. Vimito, if Rabbi Yehuda also subscribes to this position of Rabbi Meir, you should have said, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir, Vi Rabbi Yehuda Mi Ba'ilei. It should have said that this is the position of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it's a strange question. Tosafot already raises that. We have many times where Tanaim have a position, and other Tanaim agree with that position, but we don't list out all the Tanaim. But Tosafot says, in this case, you would have listed Rabbi Yehuda, because, in general, the Baal Plukta of Rabbi Meir is Rabbi Yehuda. We find them all over Shas that they disagree, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. So if you say, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir, you're implying that the Chachamim on the other side include Rabbi Yehuda. By default, you would have said that. So the fact that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree should have been specified, and you should have said, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir vi Rabbi Yehuda. Otherwise, you would get the wrong impression by simply saying that Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir. So therefore, that can't be. So now, the way we have it now, if Rabbi Meir can't subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda can't subscribe to Rabbi Meir's position, now we have no way to explain the Braita in a consistent manner, where the Reisha seemingly is like the Chachamim, and the Seifa is like Rabbi Meir. Gemara says, Hai Tana. So now we're going to a third party Tana. Savar laki Rabbi Meir bechado. Upalig alei bechado. He holds like Rabbi Meir in one instance, and he disagrees with him in the other instance. He agrees with him that a Tana is not entitled to Knas. He disagrees with him with regards to when can you perform Miyun. Right? Rabbi Meir says you can only perform Miyun up to the point of coming of age. He will disagree with that and subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll have an independent Tana now who holds like Rabbi Meir with regards to Knas. Tana is not entitled to Knas. And will hold like Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Miyun, that Miyun you can do until the age of Narut. Raf Rav Amar, Mai Mime'enet, Haru'uya Lema'in. You read the Breita incorrectly. Mime'enet here doesn't literally mean a young girl who was Mime'enet, who actually annulled her marriage, but a girl who can be Mime'enet, which means she's of the age where she could perform Miyun. That means a Ketana. It's synonymous with Ketana. So Gemara asks that question. Vilitnei Ketana. Then just write Ketana. Why would you write it in a confusing manner like Mime'enet? Gemara leaves that as a kasha, even though Tosafot raises possibilities as to why you would write Mime'enet in that way. And the Gemara does this in many other places, that milta gav orcha, that the Gemara is teaching you something that you wouldn't have known otherwise, which is that miyun goes until the time of ketanut. So that would help us. That would be an extra piece of information we would get if we're writing as a mime'enet instead of ketana. Nevertheless, the Gemara sees that as not being the possibility here, and therefore you should have written ketana if Raphram's right. His answer is a nice answer, but the language does not support it in the Braita. And therefore, we're really left with the answer that suggests that we have a third Tana here who subscribes to Rabbi Meir with regards to Knas, that Tana is not entitled to Knas, and subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Miyun, that Miyun is applicable until the age of Narut. All right. Ailonit, ein la Knas, velo pitui. We said in the Braita that an Eilonit is not entitled to Knas or Pitui. Viri Minhi. Is that really true? We have a Braita. Achereshet ve'ashuta v'Eilonit yesh lahen Knas. So that's first of all our issue over here, that we have a Achereshet, Ashuta, and Eilonit are all entitled to Knas, and the Eilonit, it says here, is entitled to Knas, versus the Braita that we brought before that says she's not entitled to Knas, and that's the question. Ve'yesh lahen ta'anat bitulin. And they also have Tanat Bitulim. Over here, the Ri says that this should not be in the Girsa. Rashi does have it in the Girsa. And there is one, a question as to what it means. Yeshla Tanat Bitulim. That can be from both perspectives. You could say that Yeshla Tanat Bitulim is from the perspective of the woman. Or Yeshla Tanat Bitulim could be the perspective of the husband who married her. So the way that Rashi explains it is that Tanat Bitulim means that they have a right to say they are Bitulot and they're entitled to a Ketubah of 200 zuz. Whereas Tosafot and the other Rishonim claim that Tanat Bitulim means that the husband has a right to demand that she is a Bitula. And if he finds that she is not a Bitula, then he has a right to have her lose out on her ketubah. Vaha my Rumya. So Gemara says, what type of question is this? Ha Rabbi Meir, ha Rabbonon. That's a machloki between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbonon. Rabbi Anan believed that a Ktana is entitled to Knas. Rabbi Meir thinks that a Ktana is not entitled to Knas. So Eilonit has the same status as Ktana. So very easy to explain the difference in the Braitot, which is the Braita that we brought before that says Eilonit not entitled to Knas. That's Rabbi Meir, as we just said above. The Braita that we just brought that says Eilonit entitled to Knas, that's the Chachamim who say that a Ktana is entitled to Knas. Very easy answer. So easy. Utgarila, Maikarila. What was the questioner thinking? When he brought the Braita down and he questioned our Braita from before with this Braita, why did he even bring the question? It's so obvious that the answer is Zo Rabbi Meir, Zo Rabbi Banan. Why would he even bring the question down? Vishum de'itle, the mirme achrite ilave. Not because of the question in our Braita, because of another Braita that causes a problem. Not with regards to Eilonit, but with regards to Chereshet and Ashota. We have an additional Braita that causes a problem, which is Achereshet v'Ashota. Va'abogeret, umukadeitz, ein lahen tanat bitulim. They do not have a tanat bitulim. Asuma, vailonit, yesh lahen tanat bitulim. On the other hand, a suma and ailonit do have a tanat bitulim. Sumchos omer, mishum Rabbi Meir, suma, ein la tanat bitulim. Sumchos, on the other hand, in the name of Rabbi Meir, says that a suma does not have tanat bitulim. So now, as far as ailonit is concerned, that's not a stira to the braita that we brought before. Because they both say, Yeshla Tanat Bitulim. The problem is with regards to Ha Chereshet V'Ashota. Chereshet and Shota, according to this Braita, in the hand Tanat Bitulim. The Braita that we brought before said, Ha Chereshet V'Ashota V'Anit, Yeshla Hand Tanat Bitulim. So I have a stereo between two Braitot with regards to a Chereshet and Shota, as to whether they have a Tanat Bitulim or they do not have a Tanat Bitulim. Are we assuming that they have a right to Knas and that we would assume that they have Bitulim? Or again, does the husband have a right to assume that they have Bitulim going into the marriage? So here you have a Stira between the Braitot. And how do we resolve that Stira? The Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshet lo kasha. That's not a problem. Ha Rabban Gamliel v'ha Rabbi Yoshua. That's a machlok between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. The way Rashi learns it is, this is Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua that we saw earlier in the previous parak. Rabbi Gamliel says that the woman is believed when she makes a taina. Rabbi Yeshua says, lo mipia anu chayim. We don't live based on her word. So over here you have a chereshet and a shota. The problem for the chereshet and the shota is that they cannot make a claim. They don't have the ability by their, on their own volition to make a claim. Do we make a claim on their behalf? Had the woman been someone who was a pikechet, Rashi claims, then she would have made a claim like this. Mishi rastani nanasti. Once I was already engaged, nanasti. I was nanas. And therefore, we could say nistafcha sadehu. And it's his problem, not my problem. And she's still entitled to her folk tuba. And there's no claim against her for not being a bitula. This, a pikechet could make such a claim. And that would protect her in this case. Over here, the chereshet and the shota don't have the ability to make that claim. So what Rashi says, based on Rabbi Gamliel, is we make that claim on her behalf. That the Beit Din argues on her behalf to protect her in this case. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua believes that no mipi anu chayim. Even a pikechet can't make that claim, so certainly we're not going to make that claim on behalf of a chereshet and shota. So the difference here will be whether we make this claim on her behalf. If we make this claim on her behalf, she will yesh la tanat vitulim. She still will be entitled to her full ktuba. She is considered to be a ptula when she got married. It happened after the erusin, and therefore she loses nothing. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, we're not going to listen to her, whether she's a pikechet, and we're not going to make this taina as a chereshet or shota. And therefore, she's not entitled to anything. She loses out here because we have in front of us a girl who's no longer a bitula, and the burden of proof is going to be on her to show us that it was otherwise. So that'll be the difference in the brightot, and that's the way Rashi explains it. Many of the Rishonim, including Tosafot over here, disagree with Rashi for different reasons, one of which is that who says that that claim of Misha Ne'arasti Ne'anasti is a good claim? What happens if they did Kedushin and Nisuin back to back? Not like the standard where they waited a year, but more like what we do today, which is do Erusin and Nisuin back to back. So in that case, there is no claim of Misha Ne'arasti Ne'anasti. So why would we make that claim on behalf of a shota or chereshet? Why would she automatically be entitled to tanat bitulim? A pikechet who made that claim wouldn't be listened to. Why should we make that claim on their behalf? There are many instances where that is not the case. In addition, we have, as Tosafot says over here, and we remember from the previous perek, Harei shachut lefanecha is that we have the evidence in front of us. The woman's chezkat aguf has been ruined. The cheskat aguf of a woman, normally when she gets married, is that she's a bitula. Over here, we know for sure she's not a bitula. So her cheskat aguf has gone down. On the other hand, you have cheskat mamon. The cheskat mamon is that the husband has the money and that he doesn't have to pay it out. So now you're trying to remove the chazaka of the husband's ketubah, meaning that he holds the money, and you're trying to remove that with a chazaka of the woman being a bitula. Her chazaka has already been diminished by the fact that we know she's no longer a bitula. So why should she have a strong claim? Therefore, Tosafot and the other Rishonim say that the Gemara here is not arguing like Rashi says. Rather, they offer an alternative, which is the reason that they don't have a Tanat Betulim here is because they have a Chazaka that they are a Mukat Eitz. So, in Tanat Betulim is because of the nature of these women, a Shota, and a chereshet, we'll discuss this more in detail with regards to Suma as well, is that the likelihood is that something happened to them. They got bumped up, they fell. Certain things happened to them where they're more likely to be a mukat eitz. And therefore, they have a chazaka of being a mukat eitz, and that chazaka protects them. Mikom makom shana shneim yesh lahem tanat bitulim, midlo kamrei shein mukat eitz. Other women have a problem because they never said anything. Had they told us going to the marriage they were mukat eitz, they would have been completely protected. They would have been fine. After the fact, we find her to be a bi'ula, and now she says she's a mukat eitz? Why is she bringing that up after the fact? She should have told us before. With regards, bayahanach cheresh v'shota, delo ma'atzei amrei, they can't tell us this information beforehand because they don't speak. They don't communicate. Since they don't speak or they don't communicate, then they have a chazkat mukat eitz nisuot. When they get married, we assume that they have a chazak of mukat eitz, even though they can't make that claim. So therefore, these Rishonim believe that we make a tana of mukat eitz on her behalf. And then the question of whether that tana is a good tana is subject to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua as to whether she is ne'menet when she makes a tana of mukat eitz, or she's no ne'menet when she makes a tana of mukat eitz. There are others who suggest that the machloki between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua over here relates to the Cheskat Aguf. Whether she has a chazaka with regards to Cheskat Aguf of being a bitula, and that is maintained over here, or according to Rabbi Yeshua, where the Cheskat Aguf is not as important as the Cheskat Mamon of the Baal, and therefore Cheskat Aguf is not considered over here. And that's what it means, that the difference between these two brightot relates to this machloki between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. And that's the difference between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Gamliel believes that the woman's ta'ana, or the fact that the information comes from the woman, is valuable. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says, "Lo mipia anu chayim." We don't live by her word. And therefore, over here, where we have the ta'anat mukat eitz after the fact, how does that impact on the marriage or the status of the marriage originally? Does that protect her as being a bitula or not? And that will have to do with this idea of whether there's a chazaka that she is a mukat eitz or not a mukat eitz. Right, so now, the Gemara says, Imar dishmayit le Rabban Gamliel hechakatakana ihi. That when she makes the claim on herself, then she's believed. Hechalo dakana ihi. When she doesn't make the claim herself, mishmayit le. So do we really listen? Do we say that we're going to be toying on her behalf? Over here, if she had been a woman who made the claim of Mukadeitz, according to Rambam, she would be believed. But since over here she can't make the claim, we're saying we're going to make that claim on her behalf. When it says in, Kevin Damar Gamliel Mehemna, since Rambam Gamliel says a woman in these situations would be believed, Kagon Zu Tach Picha Li'ilem Hu, then we, according to the Pasuk, we open the mouth of those that can't speak. So we, in place of the woman who can't speak, we will be toying on her behalf and say, yes, that just like a woman who would speak would have said, I'm a mukadeitz, so too these women will make that claim that they are a mukadeitz. And they'll be believed, because Rabbi Gamliel says that a woman who makes such a claim is believed as a mukadeitz, as opposed to Rabbi Shua says not. But the more important thing is that she is believed and she carries more weight by saying that she's a mukadeitz, because she has a chazaka of being a mukadeitz. And since she has a chazaka of being a mukadeitz, therefore there is no tanat bitulim over here. The husband doesn't have a real claim against her that she should have said something or that is problematic. She won't lose her ketubah because of that, because he should have known up front that she is a mukadeitz. All right. Va'bogeret ein la tanat bitulim. A bogeret does not have a tanat bitulim. Va'amar Rav, bogeret notim la laila rishon. Rav says the bogeret gets the entire first night. So when an individual has bi'ah with a woman, she's going to see dam. She's going to see dam because she is a bitula. There is a risk that she's in dam because she is a nida. So how much time do we give him that says that we say that the dam that he's seeing now is dam bitulim versus dam nida? Now today, we are choshesh. After the first bi'ah, we are choshesh that the dam that we saw, the dam bitulim, had dam nida mixed in it. And therefore, right away, the husband and wife have to separate after the first bi'ah because of this chashash that she's a nida, and we can't differentiate between the tipa dam nida and the bitulim. But at least according to the Gemara, the assumption was that the dam bitulim was enough to protect. It was a tliyah to say that she wasn't a nida. So in this instance, Rav says that a bogeret who gets married, then we give the entire first night, which means that we assume any dam she sees over the first night, that is considered to be dam bitulim and not dam nida. And that means that he can have multiple biot with the woman over that night and nothing that she's citing and we're going to assume is dam nida. But what does that mean? That means that a bogeret has dam bitulim. And if that's the case, how come a bogeret ain't la tanat bitulim? Why doesn't she have a tanat bitulim? If Rav clearly says here, halachically, we assume that all the dam she's seeing is dam bitulim. So why is that the case? Where it says, Ika ta'in tanat damim hochanami. If it was a tanat danim en hochanami. Hochav ma'eskine ka'ta'in tanat petach patuach. This is Rashi's girsa. And Rashi's girsa is that there are two different issues here. One issue is dam bitulim. The other issue is petach patuach. So Ida ka'amar, Rashi says, if he says, ba'alti velo matzati dam, and I didn't find dam, vadai tana malayotohi. That is certainly a good claim. A bogeret has dam bitulim, and a bogeret will also have a tanat bitulim. So she has dam bitulim, so therefore, if he has bi'ah with her, we can assume the dam that they're citing is the dam of bitulim. Even though, as the Gemara says in other places, a bogeret's dam bitulim diminishes or is reduced, her bitulim are reduced. Nevertheless, there is dam bitulim, and therefore, if he sees dam on the first night, he can assume it's dam bitulim. Number two is, if the husband says, I did not see dam bitulim, he has a claim against this woman that he didn't see dam bitulim. On the other hand, if he comes with a claim of petach patuach matzati, which is, he didn't see any dam or he doesn't remember, they threw it out, he doesn't have any evidence with regards to the dam. But he says, this woman was a petach patuach. She definitely had bi'ah before because she seemingly has a wider vaginal canal. So he says, I want my money back. In a sense, I didn't marry a bitula. This woman already had bi'ah before. Over there, he does not have a claim. Why does there no tanat bitulim? As Rashi says, avav mishib bagra, ein rachmatzar ki bitchila, v'dom aleo ki ilu petach patuach. Because as she ages, her rechem, the vaginal canal, expands, And because of that, he gets the sensation of feeling that it is a petach patuach. But in reality, it's just her biological development that is doing that. And therefore, he's not entitled to make the claim of petach patuach. So that's what Rashi says. Rashi says there is a claim of damim, and is a claim of petach patuach. Claim of damim is a valid claim, and again, will entitle him to reduce the ketubah if he doesn't find it, and also will protect him in terms of dam nida. As far as petach patuach is concerned, he does not have a claim over here, because petach patuach can be simulated by the fact that she is aged already to the point of being a bogeret, and it seems like a petach patuach, even though it's not a petach patuach. Now, Tosafot brings from the Rach, the Rabbeinu Chananel, and the Oruch also, that there was an opposite girsa, it was just the other way around. The petach patuach is a valid claim, but the tanat damim is an invalid claim. Tosafot brings a question on the girsa of the Rach, and even though some of the others protect or try to defend the girsa of the Rach, in the end, most agree that the girsa of Rashi is the correct girsa in the Gemara here. Sumchus Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Suma Ein La Tanat Bitulim. A Suma does not have Tanat Bitulim. My time with the Sumchus. Why does Sumchus say that a woman who is blind does not have Tanat Bitulim? What about being blind makes it that she doesn't have Tanat Bitulim? Amr Zei Rabbi Pnei Shenech Betet Al Gabe Karka. Because she falls a lot, and she possibly lost her Bitulim, and because of that, she'll be a Mukatet. Kulunami Chavute Michbate. Wait, all girls fall down. All young girls fall down. So why would you say that a suma is any different? So kulu ro'ot umarot li'iman. A young girl who falls and then sees an issuance of blood, that is something that is unusual. She's not a nida yet. She's not menstruating yet. She sees dam like that. She's going to run to her mother and say, what is this? And her mother will explain to her that she lost her bitulim, that she is a mukateitz. Zu'ena ro'ah ve'numara li'ima. She doesn't see, and therefore she can't run to her mother to find out what happened. She fell. She doesn't see that she had a discharge or that her dam betulim came out. So since she doesn't see it, she doesn't know to show it to her mother to get the information. Like you're saying, we're talking about young girls here. How do they know? The answer is that they know because they go to their mothers with whatever happened. But if you don't know, if you don't see what happened, then you can't go to your mother to ask her. And that's the difference between a suma and a regular girl. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is that the lack of seeing is what causes the problem. A suma does not see, therefore she falls more often, or she gets banged up more often, and therefore she's likely to have lost her bitulim, but she doesn't show it to her mother because she doesn't know. Other than regular girls fall, but not so much because they see where they're going, and therefore when they do fall and it happens, they will show it to their mothers. That's an additional aspect to it, but that's the difference between a suma and a regular girl. Someone who goes out because of shemra does not have knas and pitui. So now, ayotzeit mishum shemra bat skilahi. If we're talking about shemra, then the problem here is she's chayevet skila. Here we're talking about a narau murasa who had an extramarital affair. And if we're talking about shemra like in the classic sense of the Torah, then shemra means that if she now is found to be a non-bitula, then there's a serious issue over here and she's chayevet skila. So, Amar Rav Sheshet, Hachi Kamar, Mishi Atzale Hashem Rabi Yalduta, Ein Lalo Knas Velo Pitoy. This is not classic Motzi Shemra that we find in the Parsha and the Torah of an Aran Marusa, where the husband claims that she had an extramarital affair because he didn't find Bitulim when he married her. This is a case where there were rumors circulating about this young girl, rumors that were surfacing. So, Amar Papa, Shmai Mina, Hai Shtara Reya, Loba Gvinan Bey. If you have a star that rumors circulate that it is a false star or it was forged, then you also can't collect with it. Mar says, hey, dami. Ilame the nafa kala ale, the shtara de zaifahu. If we have rumors circulating that this star was a forgery, the kavata de hocha. Over here in our case, the nafa kala kala de zanai. There were rumors circulating that she was mizaneh, v'amarava, yatzala shem mizaneh, be'ir, in choshinla. Even if there are rumors circulating that she's mizaneh, that has no impact. We do not worry about it. Rumors are not enough to soil the reputation of an individual. If there are rumors, we wouldn't even act on those rumors. So if we're not going to act on those rumors, then how is Rav Papa comparing the case of shtar to this case? Because he's saying, oh, if there are rumors that the shtar was forged, then we don't collect with it. Well, the same equivalent case by a girl, if we had rumors that she was mizaneh, we would not worry about it. So why should we worry about it by a shtar? Ella? To Atabetre, two edim come, Amrele didhu, tevatanhi biisura. So they say, two edim show up and say that this young girl basically proposed to them. She offered them to have relations with them, to have intercourse with them, and they rejected her. So now the rumors are being substantiated by the fact that this girl came to Edim and basically said, that she offered herself over to these two individuals. So now we can suspect that even though they did not acquiesce, somebody else did, meaning that they didn't agree to do it, but somebody else did. The Kalatada Hocha over here, the Atu Beitrei, Amrele didhu, Amrele Zaifuli. He came to two Edim and said, can you forge this contract for me? Bishlam Ahotam, the Gemara says, wait a minute, there's a difference in these cases. Shriche Prutzim. She'll have no problem finding someone who is willing to have intercourse with her. Even if these two guys rejected her, someone else will obviously give in because there's always Prutzim that are out there. There's no shortage of people that are willing to act in that way. Now, over here, where the Edim come and say, he asked us to forge a contract for them, then what? We're going to assume that there are other people out there who are forging contracts? That everybody in the world is forging contracts? You can't just extrapolate because he asked these two people that he's going to ask, or they're going to find people that are willing to forge a contract. So when it says, Achanami came into Kamahadar as Yufa, Imar Zyufa Zayefikatov. Since he's searching for someone to forge the contract, what we say in the end is that he figured out how to do it himself. He figured out how to forge the contract. Either he learned how to do it, or he's going to find the people who can't do it because he's intent on getting a forgery over here. So it's not a suspicion about other people, it's a suspicion about this guy that he's going to forge a contract. Therefore, the conclusion here is, if we have substantiated evidence that there's a problem here, either by the case of the girl that she proposed intercourse with these Edim, even though they did not get together with her, we could suppose that that behavior was repeated in other places, and therefore she is a mizaneh, and that's why the shame rod, these rumors have impact over here. And the same thing with the ziyuf. If we have a substantiated evidence that he tried to forge a contract with these individuals, in the end, that's what's going to happen. He's going to get a forged contract. Now we have to suspect that he is forging contracts, and that it might affect this contract, it might even affect all the contracts, according to many of the Rishonim that he has. We have to be suspicious of all of his contracts because this guy is just not reliable. He tried to forge contracts. And that's what Rav Papa says the connection is. And that's what it means. Meshum Shemra in our Braita did not mean Motzi Shemra, but rather Meshum Shemra is that there are rumors circulating that this girl was Mizana. All right. Now, this Mishnah is really the corollary or the other half of the first Mishnah. They're really together as a unit. The Gemara quotes this Mishnah before we saw a number of times, which is Ve'elu She'en Lahem Knas. Our Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Perek, talked about Elo She'esh Lahem Knas. These are the ones that do have Knas. Now here's the correlate to that. These are the women that are not entitled to Knas. Habala Gioret, Vala Shvuya, Vala Shivcha, Shinivdu, Shinitgairu, Shinishtacharu, Yeterot, Albanot, Shloshanim, Beyom Echad. That any of these women who were either a Shvuya in captivity, or she was a Shivcha, or she was a Nachrit over the age of 3, then the assumption is that they are not bitulot for different reasons in each of these cases. By shvuya, there's a chashash that she was niv'ala ayidei the captors. By an achrit, we assume that in her previous lifestyle, where that was a more free lifestyle, she had bi'ah, and therefore she's not assumed to be a bitula. And by shivcha, again, she's nifkeret to bi'ah, and that's the nature of a shivcha, or the position that she's in. And therefore, the assumption is that all these women had bi'ah, and since they had bi'ah, they do not have bitulim. If they don't have bitulim, they're not entitled to kenas. And that'll be their chazaka. Now, under the age of 3, where the bitulim stay in place, then there's nothing to talk about. Over the age of 3, where if she was nivelet, then the bitulim are no longer there, they will not grow back, in a sense, then there's this issue here that she's not a bitula. Now, as far as a shvuya is concerned, it's a little difficult because Ishvuya, we're not certain that she had bi'ah. It's a chashash that she had bi'ah. So based on a chashash, we're going to have her lose out on the knas over here. So Tosafot says that in order to reinforce this gzeirah, or takanat chachamim, that Ishvuya may not marry a kohen because we have a chashash that she was nivelet to her captors, they made it that she was considered to be nivelet across the board.
So even though it's only a chashash here, and she really should be entitled to kenas because a motzi mi chaveru alav araya, and over here, really, the assumption is she has cheskat aguf, that she is a bitulah, and therefore she should be entitled to kenas. Nevertheless, the chachamim were mitakein over here that she loses the kenas or does not get the kenas in order to reinforce this idea that she is a bitulah for a kohen, and a kohen cannot marry her. In order to keep that consistency about her status, they say she's not entitled to a kenas, even though it was only a chashash. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shvuya sheniftei tarihi b'kdushata. Rabbi Yehuda says that a shvuya that is redeemed, she retains her kdusha, afapi shegidola. Even though she's already of age, no matter what her age is, no matter when she was held in captivity, we assume that nothing happened, and she still is a bitula. Haba al bito, valbat bito, albat beno. Person who rapes a daughter, granddaughter through his daughter, a granddaughter through his son, albat ishto, a stepdaughter, albat binav, albat bita, a step-granddaughter through his stepdaughter or through his stepson. Ein lahem knas. There is no knas paid here. Mipnei shemitchayev b'nafsho. Because he's going to lose his life over here. The fact that he engaged in this activity is subject to a mitah, to skila. Shemitatan bidei beitin. And that is a chiyuv mitah, not of karet, not bidei shemayim, but chiyuv mitat beitin. Chol mitchayev b'nafsho, ein mishalei mamon. And anybody who is chayav to give up his life because of the action or infraction that he had, that person is exempt from paying money. This is what we otherwise known as kamle bidder abamine. Shenamar, the pasuk says, im lo yason anoshi anesh. If there is no death here, and again we saw before whether that means the death of the woman, or there's no death penalty for the individual who killed the woman, then anoshi anesh, then he pays the money. Then he has to pay for the restitution of the woman's health, as well as the loss, the miscarriage that happened over there. But otherwise, he doesn't pay. So you see that the payment is dependent on whether there is a death penalty over here or not. Here where there is a death penalty, there will be no payment. There will be no knas that is made. Now, there are questions asked here. First of all, by Bito, what is the story? By Bito, the knas goes to the father. So when the individual rapes his daughter, what would the knas do anyway? The knas would have gone to the father anyway, and he's the one perpetrating the act. So there should be no knas here, irrespective of kamli d'rabba minei. Some suggest it's a case where the father passed away after the act, and therefore the yorshim are coming to collect the knas, and they're not entitled to knas. Or some say it's a case where she was a yatoma b'chayei avia. She was already a yatoma, she had married her off once, she was divorced, and then this incident happened where the father is no longer entitled to her knas. And since he's not entitled to her knas, then the knas would belong to her. And because of that, there is no knas because of kamalei d'rabbi mune, but otherwise he would have had to pay knas in this instance. Okay, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Dosa amru davar echad. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Dosa said the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda Adamran, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says that a shvuya is considered to be a bitula and that she didn't have biyah with the captors. Rabbi Dosa is the Tanya, we have a brighter. Shvuya uchelet bitshuma, divri Rabbi Dosa. Redosa says the Shvuya is entitled to eat Shuma when she comes back. That's whether she is Shaval Beit Avia, she's not married yet, she's going back to her father's house, she's entitled to Shuma, or whether she's married to a Kohen, she can remain married to the Kohen because she's not considered to be a Bila or having any extramarital Bia. I'm Redosa. Chima Sala Aravi Alaz. This Aravi, what did he do to her? Mipnei Shimeach Lo Ben Dadea Pasla Minakuna. Because he played around with her, she's now pasul min akuna. Tosafot over here explains why they use the term aravi over here. Because the Gemara in Kiddushin says with regards to zima, that aravim are shtufei zima. So even here in aravi is a shtuf zima. When he takes this girl into captivity, he may play around with her, but he will not have intercourse with her. The assumption is that he might take pleasure from her, or touching her, or doing inappropriate things, but he will not have intercourse with her. And that's Rabbi Dosa's assumption, that a shvuya is a bitula, just like Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, that a shvuya is a bitula. So Amar Rabo, and again, the gifts of change here, probably Zamar Rabo, Dilmalohi. Maybe the comparison that Rabbi Yochanan is making is incorrect. The reason that Rabbi Yehuda over here says that the shvuya is considered to be a bitula is because the person who perpetrated the act against her did something wrong. Now, if we say, because of a chashash by shvuya that she's considered to be a bi'ula, we're not going to pay knas, The only beneficiary of that is the individual who perpetrated the crime over here. So we're not going to benefit him because of a chashash. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. He's saying it lachomra. And not that she is a betula. Just, in this case, we'll classify her as a betula, even though there is a chashash that she's not. Because if we don't do that, then the only beneficiary is this guy who raped her. And why should we give him that benefit? Aval hotam by truma, kerabonan svirle. He'll agree with the rabbanon and argue in Rabbi Dosa. By the case of truma, there is a chashash over here. And therefore, we won't entitle to eat truma. We'll say there is a chashash of biyah. Inami, or the other way around, ad kam lokam Rabbi Dosa hotam ele betruma derabanan. Over there, where it was truma derabanan, that's why he says that she can eat it, or she's entitled to it, because we're talking about truma derabanan, Rashi has in the words, truma bizman hazeh, that is, derabanan. Aval knas deoraita, kirabanan sphirle, but maybe Rabbi Dos agrees in our Mishnah to the rabanan's position, because there we're talking about doraita. Knas is a payment mi doraita. We're going to only insist on a payment doraita if we're certain. Tamarle abaye, vitaime derabihuda, ocha, shloi, chiteo, chote, niskar. So Abaye says, Bedouim, you're telling me that the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda's position in the Mishnah is because we don't want the Choteh ben Iskar, we don't want the rapist here to benefit from the fact that we have a chashash? V'ha Tanya, we have a bright, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shvuyash Nishbeit, Harihi B'Kdushata. A woman who's taken into captivity retains her Kdusha, Afilu Bat Eser Shanim, even if she was 10 years old, Ktubata Matayim, who Ktuba is 200. So, over there, he's classifying her as a betula for marriage, not a betula for rape. That's not chote niskar. Who's the chote over here? A guy's marrying her, and he's saying she gets a ktuba matayim that she's a betula. That means she's a full-fledged betula. Mar says, over there, people may not marry her. If we classify her as a betula, and we only give her a ktuba of 100, people are not going to marry this woman. She's going to be less desirable for marriage. So over there, we want to say it's equivalent of Choteh Niskar, which is for the benefit or the protection of the woman, we want to have her be classified as a Betula. So yes, it's not exactly Choteh Niskar, but there's a reason to classify her as a Betula over here, because then she'll be able to get married and she will not be considered to be problematic goods because she was taken into captivity. It's only a Chashash. So over here, we want to give her the clean bill of health so that she gets married. So because of that, we grant her the status of a bitula with regards to marriage. So what we're answering is that this is unique to the case of rape and marriage, but otherwise she would not have a classification of bitula. So Gemara says, "V'savar Rabbi Yehuda b'kdushata kaima." Is that really true that Rabbi Yehuda believes that she retains her kdusha? V'atanya. Now we have a bright. And this question is only according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says Rabbi Yehuda believes or thinks that she's a full-fledged bitula. According to Rabba, who said, or Rabba or Rova, who says over here, that ishloi hei chote niskar, then none of these are questions, because he'll just answer that Rabbi Yehuda believes that there's only betula in these two unique cases, the case of ketubah and the case of the rape. But otherwise, he does not believe that, and therefore none of these questions are questions. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks Rabbi Yehuda across the board believes she's a betula, this is a question, which is, vatanya, pudet ashvuya isaena. A person who redeems a captive, he can marry her. Made ba lo isaena. If he testifies about her, then he may not marry her. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ben kachu ben kach lo yisena. Whether he redeemed her or testified about her, he cannot marry her. The assumption here is that it's a Kohen redeeming her. And in redeeming her, we're assuming that she is a betula. So the Gemara here says, if he redeems her, he can marry her, assuming that she's a betula. If he testifies about her that she is a betula, then he cannot marry her. And we'll see why. And Rabbi Yehuda says, it doesn't matter, he can't marry her. Well, if it doesn't matter, he can't marry her, what is Rabbi Yehuda saying? She's not classified as a betula. How do we reconcile that with Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah and this Rabbi Yehuda of the Braita? Hagufa kasha. The Gemara says, okay, first of all, the Braita itself is problematic. Amar ta budeta shvuya yisena. You say that a person who redeems a woman can marry her, then rather than a maid ba lo yisena. And then you say, well, if he testifies about her, he can't marry her. Bishum the maid ba lo yisena. Just because he redeemed her and then testified about her, he's not allowed to marry her. The Gemara did not see the Braita as saying, redeem her or testify about her. It was either redeems her or he redeems her and testifies about her. That's how they read the Braita. That the podeh part of it was on both aspects. Podeh alone or podeh mida. And the Gemara says that makes no sense. It says, halokashi achi kamar. This is what it means. Habodeh te shvuya umeid ba yisena. Someone who redeems a shvuya and testifies that she is a betula, he can marry her. Made ba kadi. If he just testifies about her but did not redeem her, lo yisena, he can't marry her. Somebody else redeemed her, and then he comes and testifies the fact that she is still a betulah, that she never was nivelet while she was a shvuyah. So there he can't marry her. The Gemara assumes that if a person is expending money to redeem a woman, then for sure he believes, and it's bari lo, that she is a betulah, and therefore he is believed. In the case where he comes to testify, what we think is that he likes this woman, and therefore he's coming to testify to her that she's a betulah in order that he can marry her. So in that case, we have suspicions because he didn't expend any money. Since he didn't put any money up, we have to worry about his motives here when he comes to testify. On the other hand, when the individual actually redeemed her, put his money on the line, he must have known, and therefore he's believed. Yikomakom kasha the Rabbi Yehuda. Nevertheless, we have a problem in Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that she's not classified as a betulah. Amar Papa, no problem. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Meir, ben kach isena. Just flip the girsa to read isena. Now that's not so simple. Sometimes when you reread something, here he's making the girsa just the opposite. The Rishonim come up with ways to read that in, which is Rabbi Yehuda says, ben kach lo isena. That was really a rhetorical question. And since it's a rhetorical question, what he really meant was ben kach isena. And that's how they solved the problem. Funa breder of Shuomer lo olam kiditani. That's the way that it's written. But Rabbi Yehuda, the Divrehem, the Rabbanan Kamar. He's saying this in the position of the Rabbanan. He's saying, Zlididi, ben kach isena. According to me, she could get married either way because a shvuya has a classification of being a betula. Eladidchu, according to you, ben kach lo isena. According to you, they shouldn't get married either way, mi boyele. That's what it should have said. I mean, according to the Rabbanan, why is there a differentiation between when he redeems her versus when an individual testifies about her? There should be no difference. If you're choshesh that she was nivelet, then be choshesh nivelet in all cases. I am consistent. I say that she is a betulah across the board. You should be consistent and say that she is a betulah across the board. Why are you differentiating between whether he redeemed her or not? This is the answer that I mentioned before, Rabbanan. Hapudet ha-shvuya me'id ba'isena lo shadi inish zuze bichdi. People don't throw away their money for no reason. People, when they put money down, it's because they believe something is true. He would only have redeemed her, and he would only got involved here if he was certain that this woman was a betulah, and he knows that she is a betulah. Made by kadi lo yisena shemeinav natanba. In the case of adult, he's like a kohen. He says, "Yeah, this is a really nice girl. She's pretty. I want to marry her. I'm going to tell her that she was a betulah." He has a reason here to testify that she's a betulah, even though he doesn't know that she is a betulah, because then he can marry her. And again, he's not expending any money. He's not putting his money on the line. So there's no loss to him. And in that sense, we will say that we have to be suspicious of his testimony over here. And therefore, he cannot marry her. His testimony is fine. It's just that he himself can't marry her because then we worry about him being nogea, but davar in the testimony. The other hand, when he puts money on the line, and then he testifies about her, he's no longer at a nogea but davar. I mean, he is more of a nogea but davar because he has money on the line. But he would never have put up the money on the line in the first place if he wasn't certain. And therefore, his testimony is believed even with regards to himself that she is considered to be a betulah.
So he is saying even in the case.
It invalidates his own for himself because that's where we have the suspicions. But if he testifies and someone else gets married, there's no reason to suspect that he's lying about the fact that she is a betulah. But on the other hand, if the guy expended money and he's coming to testify, yes, he's nogea but davar. But on that case, but the fact that he already expended money, he knows what he's doing and he believes in what he's doing. Now, the truth is that everybody has an obligation to redeem someone. So what's unique about this? There's a mitzvah independent of marrying this woman that to redeem. The issue might be over here is that, yes, everybody's obligated to redeem. But over here, he specifically redeemed this woman and went out of his way to do it because he probably wanted to marry her. And in that instance, then that money or that expenditure is not solely for the mitzvah purposes, but it's also within mind that he wants to marry her. And because he expends the money in that manner, we believe him at that point because he would only have put money on the line if he knew for certain that she was a betulah. And when he testifies, we're not going to suspect that his testimony is only to benefit himself because he wouldn't have expended the money if he wasn't certain up front. Because if he wasn't certain up front, then he risks redeeming this woman and then having her be declared a nivelet, and then he'll lose out on all the money that he expended over this woman. Now, of course, he does the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim, but he may not have put up that much money, he may not have redeemed this woman in particular, whatever the reasons are that he has his eye on this woman in redeeming her, that makes it that the expenditure of money gives him more nemanut in this instance. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line on Lamed Vav Amud Bet.